The years between the two world wars are often called the Golden Age of Mysteries. One of the most endearingly popular writers of that era was Dorothy L. Sayers, best known for her Lord Peter Wimsey mysteries. They were adapted for television in the 1970s by the BBC and shown on PBS. The first two of the mysteries have just been released on a new DVD, the Lord Peter Wimsey Collection, Set 1. Our critic at large, John Powers, has seen them, and they got him thinking about what makes these old-fashioned English mystery stories so eternally appealing.
I've always been addicted to mystery novels. When I was growing up, I'd spend the summer plowing through English ones with exotic weapons, murders in locked rooms, eccentric detectives, and neatly calibrated twists. You know, the ones that blow your mind when it turns out that the postman did it. One of my favorites was Dorothy L. Sayers. Although her plots weren't the cleverest, her hero, Lord Peter Wimsey, was. An amateur sleuth whose genius lay hidden beneath his whimsical upper-crust patois. Back in the early 1970s, the BBC turned her crime novels into a series of TV shows, starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter. When they were shown here on Masterpiece Theatre, they became such a huge hit that they led PBS to create the series Mystery, which has run for the last 30 years. The first two episodes, Clouds of Witness and The Unpleasantness at the Bologna Club, are just out on DVD. And watching them now is like entering a nostalgic time warp. The first episode, Clouds of Witness, is typical. It begins at the Wimsey family's shooting lodge in Yorkshire. The fiancée of Lord Peter's sister, Mary, has been found shot dead in the night, and the police accuse Lord Peter's grumpy brother, Gerald, who refuses to say what he was up to at the time of the crime. Things look bad until Lord Peter comes back from the continent along with his trusty manservant, Bunter, slyly played by Glyn Houston. He begins examining the case and questioning potential suspects, all of whom seem to have secrets galore. Here, Lord Peter has just found what seems to be a key clue, a jeweled brooch shaped like a cat. He ruminates on his discovery with his friend and foil, Detective Inspector Parker.
You know, I've always thought those obliging criminals who strewed their tracks with articles of personal adornment were an invention of detective fiction for the benefit of the author.
Well, live and learn, my dear fellow. After all, you haven't been doing this job very long, have you?
The merest amateur, I confess, whereas you, as a professional...
Take a fatherly interest in your ambition. So, come on, you found it. What are your deductions?
Well, it's a charm. The sort of thing a woman wears as a brooch. Gold satin, all diamonds with... two emerald eyes. Parker stones, too. Your turn, old Parker Bird.
When I first popped Clouds of Witness into my DVD player, I wondered if it was still enjoyable. After all, the Beeb's production values weren't the greatest back then. But the series sucks you into its 1920s setting with a brand of leisurely storytelling you no longer see on TV. And it's carried by Carmichael's Lord Peter. Although a bit too old and fleshy for the part, this canny old actor knows exactly how to play Wimsey, a man who can seem as silly as Bertie Wooster, but is actually as shrewd as Jeeves. Of course, such a character is the purest confection, which is why such cozy English detective stories are mocked by literary critics and by fans of the hard-boiled crime novel. In fact, way back in the 1940s, Raymond Chandler cracked that detective writers needed to take murder away from the upper classes, the weekend house party, and the vicar's rose garden, and give it back to the people who are really good at it. Maybe so. There is something flagrantly artificial about the fictional world created by Sayers or Agatha Christie or Michael Innes. A world of country houses, loyal retainers, and murder schemes so baroque that no one would actually try to pull them off. That said, such old-school British mysteries are hardly alone in stylizing reality. There's something pretty darn artificial about Chandler's own crime novels, whose hero, Philip Marlowe, is a sentimentalized knight-errant, or in a grayer vein, about the police procedurals of Henning Mankell, in which every single crime is ripe with social meaning. And really, what could be more artificial than Elmore Leonard's dialogue, where every line just sings? The fact is, lack of realism isn't the failing of old-fashioned crime stories. It's their point. The true pleasure of the Wimsey mysteries isn't simply that they let us sink into a romanticized 20s England. It's that they take us outside the chaotic swirl of modern society, where murder is a symptom of intractable disorder. They carry us to a fantasy land so intrinsically sedate and orderly, so conservative, that murder is an aberration. All Wimsey needs to do is follow the clues and find the culprit. And once he's done this, social order is restored. You can call such plotting naked wish fulfillment, if you like. Yet that doesn't diminish its power. You see, like nearly all the mysteries in this tradition, the Lord Peter stories satisfy something in the human psyche that neither bullying nor education can erase. They offer us a fantasy of perfect closure, a world where even bloody murder is little more than a brain teaser that can and will be solved.
John Powers is film critic for Vogue magazine. You can find his reviews and columns on Vogue.com.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
The silky voice of Lena Horne enchanted audiences for decades. She was a pioneering black actress in the days when Hollywood offered few black roles for the kind of glamour she embodied. After she left Hollywood in the 50s and 60s, she was a prominent voice speaking out for civil rights. And she could be heard on records and the Broadway stage. Her one-woman show won a Tony in 1981. Lena Horne died yesterday at the age of 92. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Lynn Neary.
Someone who'll watch over me.
Dick Wolf's dreams, oh, they've been shattered. He's the executive producer of Law & Order, and he was hoping that his show would beat out Gunsmoke as the longest-running primetime TV drama ever.
Today, NBC announced that the very last Law & Order, that is the original program, is going to air later this month after 20 years. Actually, who cares about Dick Wolf? He's got a life, a real life. What about Lieutenant Anita Van Buren, who's got breast cancer? Or Jack McCoy, who's got an election to win to stay on as DA? And where do prosecutors Michael Cutter and Connie Ruberosa find work in this economy?
Well, Robert, I've sat next to you in the studio for almost 8 years now, and you are a big Law & Order fan. I know that.
And I feel a deep need to hear that sound again.
What about the spinoffs that are still on the air? There's SVU,
And
they are planning a new show, and it's going to be based in Los Angeles.
Michelle, Los Angeles is Joe Friday. Law & Order was Lenny Briscoe, the quintessential wisecracking New Yorker. Here he was trying to understand a suspect.
He's got a crush on this guy. What about the girly magazines?
Maybe he swings both ways.
Great. So now we're looking for a bisexual 50-year-old who walks with a limp, carries a cane, and whistles Dixie as he walks down the highway.
That was actually the late Jerry Orbach, who played Briscoe for 12 seasons. And you always knew that if he said that in the first 20 minutes of the show, he was wrong.
Again, this current season is Law & Order's 20th and its last, tying Gunsmoke as the longest-running drama in primetime.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. In the fast-changing world of weekly crime dramas, for the past 20 years, Law & Order has endured by telling stories that are terse, pointed, ripped from tabloid headlines, and as New York as an onion bialy or the F-word as an adjective. Yesterday, NBC announced that Law & Order will end May 24. 456 episodes, and I've seen them all, over and over. Go to any New York show and read the actors' bios. They've all played at least a corpse on Law & Order. Great stage names, including Jerry Orbach, Jesse Pathan-Murchison, and Sam Waterston, made the acting as intense as New York pastrami. The show reinvented the procedural with surprising plot twists, and maybe, most surprisingly, the cops and prosecutors didn't let their personal lives, alcoholism, cancer, or on-the-job romances, deter them from the important work they'd been given to do by the city of New York.
I don't give a damn about anything except putting the right people in jail.
Law & Order, R.I.P. Oy!